is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's good to be back after a two-week break, and it's good to be in the newly renovated Cincinnati Edition studio. The open enrollment period for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act starts November 15th. There are still many who don't have insurance, and those who do should be aware of changes in their policies, their premiums, the penalties, and deductibles. Later in the show, we're going to talk with the creator and host of This American Life, Ira Glass, about his upcoming visit to Cincinnati. But first, joining us to discuss what consumers should be aware of during this ACA enrollment period are Kara Stewart, Health Law Fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations, Catherine Keller, and Maureen Corcoran, President of Voorhees Healthcare Advisors. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And everybody, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
Maureen, let's start with you. What kind of progress has the Affordable Care Act made since the health insurance exchanges first opened for business about a year ago?
Well, Mark, that's an important question. During 2014, more than 7 million people used the exchange to purchase health insurance. And I think what's most incredible is that in Ohio, there are more than 385,000 individuals who can qualify to purchase in the exchange. In Kentucky, 145,000, and in Indiana, 278,000. So many citizens of our states here are able to purchase insurance through the exchange. There are some important changes this year that I think should make the process smoother for people, and certainly after the concerns with healthcare.gov, it's understandable that people might be a little bit reluctant. But just to give you a couple of headlines, so the whole process of application has been more streamlined than last year. CMS, the Federal Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has also indicated that they've added quite a number of individuals to help field calls. They've improved some of their Spanish-speaking capabilities. They're also allowing now, or you're able now, to get on and window shop, whereas before you had to actually log in and be a serious purchaser, if you will, but now you can get on and kind of compare. So I think what we know also is that the Congressional Budget Office is assuming that about 13 million people will purchase through the exchange in this upcoming year.
Maureen, you were talking about healthcare.gov, how it got off to a rocky start. So to your knowledge, the site is better prepared for this next go-round?
Absolutely. With something this complicated, you know, there's going to continue to be refinements. But I think probably in addition to the website improvements, it's important that people know there are individuals who can help you walk through the process, can help answer your questions, help you navigate what can be fairly complicated, even if the website's working really well.
Kate, Ohio opted to use the federal exchange, healthcare.gov. How has enrollment gone in Ohio?
Enrollment went okay. I mean, we had 185,000 people enroll in private insurance plans on the marketplace, which I think is fabulous. But if you listen to the numbers of people who are eligible to purchase insurance in Ohio, we have a ways to go. However, the enrollment for Medicaid through the Medicaid expansion, which was also available on the federal marketplace, has gone really well in the state of Ohio.
And Kara, Kentucky took the other option. They took creating their own site. You came up with Kynect, K-Y-N-E-C-T, is that right?
Right, kynect.ky.gov.
And how's that been working? How's the enrollment been on that?
Oh, well, it led the nation in per capita enrollment, so I think we can call that a win. It's, you know, we were able to enroll over 1 in 10 Kentuckians who were, many of which were previously uninsured, so I'd call it a success.
Okay. Maureen, do we know much about who signed up in that initial open enrollment period? Was it mainly younger people who were signing up?
Well, there was concern about whether younger folks would sign up because they tend to be healthier. Certainly Kara and Kate may have some more impressions they can share. But, you know, keep in mind that, you know, basically what the exchange is most helpful for are those families with children between 200% of poverty and 400% of poverty. You know, that's going to be the group that's most significantly impacted.
Kate, what's your perspective on who's been?
So it was diverse and across the board of who did sign up. I think the over 55 to 65 is a population that is a population in gap before they hit Medicare, where we saw a big increase in Ohio. We also saw we did see an increase in youth purchasing insurance. However, one of the areas that we saw a lack of enrollment was single men, and that is an area I think you'll see a targeted outreach to this time around.
In Kentucky, we had about 52, over half of the enrollees in Connect were under 35, which was much higher than anticipated, and that was a population specifically targeted and concerned about. Single men was still the lowest of that population to enroll, so that will be a targeted outreach in Kentucky this year, too.
Kara, Kate was talking about the role of Medicaid expansion in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And in Kentucky, you also expanded Medicaid. And I think Governor Beshear referred to the expansion as the single most important decision in our lifetime for improving the health of Kentuckians. Do you think he's on target about that?
I mean, I think yes to be determined, but it certainly hasn't hurt. I mean, we've got hundreds of thousands of people who were previously kept out of our healthcare system who now can go to the doctor. So, I mean, if you talk to any single one of those people, you would agree with him because you would hear their story and hear their experience of what options they had before versus, you know, one lady's ability to work now because she can get a cortisone shot for her knee. You know, all of these individual stories, each one would make you think, yep. Probably right, Governor Beshear.
Well, you mentioned something interesting in there, that getting a cortisone shot so that you can go back to work. And I think the other thing that the governor's office mentioned was an expectation of a positive economic effect from this expansion. I think they were predicting 17,000 new jobs as a result, $16 billion in economic impact between now and 2021. You agree with that as well?
I mean, I'm not an economist, so I don't know exactly how those figures work out. I know there have been a lot of people analyze Governor Beshear's numbers, and there have been people come out all across the board as to what the expectations will be. I think we have to wait until 2021 to probably get the best answer on that. I know that there's been job growth in sectors in Kentucky consistently in some things you could consider healthcare. I don't know that we have enough data to say whether it's on track or not on track. But I know we have a lot more Kentuckians accessing healthcare, which means, you know, business is growing just by sheer volume. If 1 in 10 Kentuckian enrolled in health coverage, that's got to be a boost.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. The Kaiser Family Foundation had some interesting statistics about the first open enrollment, and I think the figure they used, Maureen, was roughly 8 million people signing up, which they said is about 28% of those eligible to use the exchanges. So that's a fraction of those who could have signed up. So, Maureen, is this a sign of the huge untapped market that's still ahead for the Affordable Care Act? And is it also maybe a sign of the challenges ahead for the program?
I think both are true. As I mentioned, was 7 or 8 million, depending on, you know, whose numbers you look at for last year. They're projecting about 13 million for this coming year. And just order of magnitude, Kaiser, I believe, also estimates about 28 million could use the exchange. So there's a couple things that we know. One is, you know, healthcare actually is pretty complicated, and so that can be off-putting to people who need assistance or trying to figure out these choices. There also has been, you know, concerns about the startup of the program, and certainly, I believe, as the public discussion continues on this and people get more educated about it, that you will see more of those individuals signing up for Medicaid when they're eligible, using the exchange when they're eligible, and taking advantage of some of the subsidies and tax credits that are available.
Maureen, we've also got the problem of the lack of Medicaid expansion in a lot of states, especially across the South. I mean, so there's millions of Americans who would be eligible for health care coverage affordable to them who are currently being left out because of their state's individual choice to not expand Medicaid. So when that goes into that number, I can't ignore them.
That's right. Yeah, it's probably, you know, about a little shy of 5 million people who are in that gap, where the group that the Affordable Care Act was intended to help to by expanding Medicaid, but their governors, for a variety of reasons, chose not to expand the program. those that group is a concern. And those folks also do not have subsidies and additional income support to purchase through the exchange. So they're really in a tough spot until some of this gets worked out.
So Kate and Kara, I take it from your viewpoints at the state level, there's still quite a bit of work to do in Ohio, also quite a bit of work left to do in Kentucky.
That is true. And in Ohio, we're at about 25% of the people who are eligible to enroll in a private health insurance plan on the marketplace enrolled. So there's a long way to go. We've had some better success in Medicaid outreach in parts of the state. Hamilton County, for example, has done a fabulous job. About 50% of the people who are eligible for Medicaid in Ohio through the expansion have been signed up. But we do expect, as people get more comfortable with the concept of where to purchase insurance on the marketplace, that it becomes more normalized, more people will go there. And look for insurance there. And then as people enter the healthcare system and they need healthcare, then there's another opportunity to sign people up.
And I think that's important just to remind folks that, for a family of four, if you have an income below about $31,000, you may qualify for Medicaid in either Ohio or Kentucky. So we often find that people don't know that they're actually eligible. So if any of your listeners have incomes around that amount, they also want to be thinking about whether Medicaid might be a good option for them.
And Maureen, that family of four up to almost $100,000 a year would be eligible for assistance to make it more affordable.
That's right.
Yeah, and
that's
one of the things that we saw in Ohio, and maybe in other states saw this, is we had a large number of people enroll for bronze plans, which is a plan that doesn't come with any tax subsidies, but it's considerably on face value the cheapest plan you can purchase. And that's one of the worries we have about the ability to window shop, is that if people only see the sticker price and they don't see what subsidies and discounts that they might get because of their income, they might not go through the process. So we're encouraging people to actually reach out for help, call a broker, call a navigator, have someone walk through the process, because you may be able to get cheaper insurance than the window price.
Right. I mean, if you're a single person up to $47,000, $48,000, then you're going to be eligible for some sort of assistance in that it's tied to your income, not necessarily the sticker price. So knowing your income is more important than knowing the sticker price of the health coverage.
It might be helpful to translate some of this, Mark, for your listeners. In putting the implementation of the law together, they created these what are called metal levels. So they're, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And those names are intended to tell people how much of the total cost you as a consumer might pay. So as Kara was just pointing out, if the lowest level is a bronze plan, and in that case it means that the consumer can expect to pay about 40% of the cost, whereas with the more expensive plan, the platinum, the consumer can expect to pay about 10%. Now, what's really important, though, it's really important for folks to compare the different choices, because you might actually find that it will cost you less to buy the more expensive plan, because as Kara also pointed out, you don't get any subsidies or tax credits if you buy that lowest level plan, the bronze. So if you want, tax credits or subsidies to assist, you have to buy one of the three higher metal levels, silver, gold, and platinum.
So, Maureen, it's almost like you have to be thinking ahead of how much medical expense you paid in the past, how much you might pay in the future. It's almost like financial planning, isn't it? You have to sit down and think about, what do I need to do? Because the bronze plan, as you were saying, you have your deductible, then you have 60% that's paid by the insurance company and 40% that you're paying for as the consumer. So between the two things, you need to do some thinking ahead, don't you?
You do. And we all ought to... value our lives and our health as much as we do our car insurance or other kinds of insurance that we buy. But there are a number of very good helps online for folks. The Center for Budget and Policy has a comparison worksheet. Families USA has a worksheet, and it does exactly what you're saying, Mark. It walks you through and says what kind of premium would you pay? You know, who is your doctor? Do you want to stay with that doctor? What kind of medications do people in your family take? You know, are they brand name or generic, and do you have to pay more for those? It goes through and asks you a series of those kinds of questions, because certainly who my doctor is and what kind of medicines I take, I may or may not want to have any disruption or change to, and that will affect the choices that I have available to me.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll continue our conversation about the Affordable Care Act. What you need to know is the open enrollment period for the second year of the health exchanges gets underway soon. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Kara Stewart, Health Law Fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations Catherine Keller, and Maureen Corcoran, President of Voorhees Healthcare Advisors. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act. Open enrollment starts November 15th. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with James in Springfield. Good afternoon, James. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello, how are you all?
Good, thank you.
My question is, as a parent with a 26-year-old who is unemployed and whom is entering school, also with, and I also have a soon-to-be 16-year-old and a 13-year-old. I may have had this question answered. If I make under $30,000 and the 26-year-old is still in my house and still being used, I'm still claiming for expenses on taxes, what sort of health care is he eligible for?
Okay. Who wants to field that? Maureen, Kara, Kate?
Well, I'm certainly glad to start, and Karen, Kate can jump in. So the most important thing, James, is how you're focused particularly on the 26-year-old and whether he continues to be treated as a dependent on your tax for your tax return. So you know, in a simple sort of way, if he continues to be a member of your household through his 26th year and he is treated as a dependent in your household, then you will be able to count him as a member of your household. But there are that's another reason why it's really helpful to talk with one of the navigators or the, you know, they call them navigators or assisters or connectors to help you figure out what all the particular information is that you're going to have as you apply and make sure that you have the information to, you know, make sure you can be successful with getting your coverage.
Yes. Is there a 1-800 number or should all this be done at healthcare.gov?
This is Kate. So in Ohio right now, we have healthcare.gov and an 800 number that the federal government offers. There are people on site and on the ground that you can go talk with. The Free Store Food Bank employs many of the navigators throughout the community who can help you. There are also insurance brokers who can work with you, and they're free to you. You can a broker that can sell on the marketplace. Starting next month, there will be an 800 number in the state of Ohio for you to call. I don't have the number yet. It hasn't been published. But when the number is published, and we will definitely market it. So you'll see it in November. There'll be a number you can call to set up an appointment. So there's going to be a centralized statewide scheduling system in Ohio to help people find people to set up appointments.
James, thank you very much for your questions. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Let's talk with Jean in New Richmond. Jean, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon.
Yes, my question is, I have a 22-year-old son who does not live with us. I was going to sign him up in November 15th for Obamacare. He only makes minimum wage, just started a job. Should he qualify for Medicare?
Well, I mean, it depends on, hi, this is Kara Stewart. It depends on what his job is. He's making minimum wage. A minimum wage person working full-time in their own household would be eligible for Medicaid. That would be $0 a month for the monthly cost. But it depends on if he's still a member of your household and your tax household.
But I think it's important to know, Jean, that Medicaid is a very good and comprehensive benefit, and many of the sorts of managed care plans that Medicaid uses are the same ones who are providing offering insurance through the exchange. So certainly, if he qualifies for Medicaid, then he absolutely should take advantage of that and enroll.
Yeah, Jean, I think what Maureen's saying is there's nothing else better you could buy him out there if he's eligible for Medicaid, that'd be his best option.
Okay, so I should try that first.
Well, if you get on healthcare.gov, or Kate was just talking about with some of the navigators that are available, they'll assess for anything that your son qualifies for. So you don't need to figure out which line do I go stand in. If you talk with one of the navigators or, call the 1-800 number when it becomes available here in Ohio in November, they'll walk you through everything that your son might qualify for.
Right. That's actually in the federal law. It's called No Wrong Door. You got to be able to get to anything you're eligible for.
Okay. So that 800 number won't be available till November 15th?
Oh, no. You can apply for Medicaid at any time. That you can never.
Right.
Medicaid never closes. So it's important to know that if you have a change in circumstance, you can always, change your health coverage if it's one of the special enrollment periods. But also, Medicaid never closes. So if you were to lose your job, something like that, any time of the year, you can enroll.
And Ohio Medicaid has its own website, so you don't have to go through the federal marketplace if you don't want to. You can go through benefits.ohio.gov and apply there on Ohio's website.
Jean, thank you very much for your questions. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So we still have a lot of people who haven't signed up yet for coverage. And Kate, what is your advice for those who haven't signed up yet? What do they need to do to get ready for this next open enrollment period? And what kind of steps can they take to make this an easier process when they do start enrolling?
Well, I think the key to knowing for the enrollment process is to pull your income statements together. So if you're applying for insurance, you need to know what your income is and things. And it would probably be wise for you to collect sort of know your health history, who the doctors are, because the panels will vary by insurance. So you just want to have your ducks all lined up. And then when you get on, when it becomes available, you can start shopping for the insurance in the middle of November. To have coverage begin January 1st, you have to have signed up for insurance by December 15th. So if that would be the goal for this year, but then you have until, the middle of February to actually complete the process.
Yeah. that's important. So you have to apply by December 15 if you want coverage starting January 1.
Kara, what's your advice for people in Kentucky as they start to go on to Connect and fill out the enrollment forms? What should they do to be prepared ahead of time?
I think just what Kate said and Maureen said, just knowing what your income is really the most important thing. And of course, if you have a doctor that you want to continue a relationship with, making sure that you've got their names to make sure that a plan you choose, that doctor would be in network. If you get a plan and that doctor is out of network, that can cause some surprise cost, I think, that for consumers. So it's important to shop. I tell people to actually start with, if you've got a doctor you have a relationship with and you want to continue that, that's where you start your shopping, is to make sure you only look at plans that cover that doctor in network.
Yeah, and I would suggest that people have patience. Buying insurance is not easy. It's not simple, and it really shouldn't be. It is, as we mentioned earlier, a big part of your financial plan, and you really need to take the time to look through your options, make sure that the plan you pick fits your needs and fits your budget. And again, the sticker price, even after subsidies, isn't the total cost of health insurance. You're not done paying the bills once you pay your premium costs. So you really need to calculate, if you're somebody with a chronic illness, you really need to put those costs into your plan.
Kate, how many plans and insurers are there available for Ohioans?
It's around 290 plans. It's huge.
That's a lot to think about.
Which is why we're really encouraging people to reach out for help.
And Kara, what about in Kentucky? How many insurers? How many plans?
I don't know how many total plans are going to be this year. We won't know that, unfortunately, until November 15th. We had a lot of plans last year. And this year, we're going to have even more insurers. We've added two more insurers into the individual private market. WellCare and CareSource are now going to be in the individual private market, upping that number. And then we'll have the same number of MCOs, the Medicaid Managed Care Organizations.
And I'm assuming that in Ohio and Kentucky, it's the same thing. You have your, I think you start with catastrophic. Is that the lowest level available? Or
that's a name for it, bronze. Yeah,
that's,
well, catastrophic is a separate, only people under 26. But then bronze, I would consider also catastrophic.
So you got bronze, you've got silver, gold, platinum. Is that how it works, basically?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
And how do those work? I know the bronze is 60-40 with a deductible, and then?
And then they each go up 70-30, 80-20, 90-10.
There's something we've always had. We just now have names to describe it. We've always had plans where you paid more each month and then less when you went to the doctor, and less each month and more when you went to the doctor. Now we just have these words to describe those and to know how to talk about it, to compare them.
And what helps a lot is now we have a standard way that people can look at what that benefit is. So there's more consistency required now in terms of how the insurance options are laid out for folks, so that it's a little easier to compare one to another than maybe it was in the past.
Well, I would say it's possible to compare one to another, where I don't think that would have been true before.
Yeah,
that's true.
And Maureen, even with all the different plan levels, they all have to cover the same minimum set of services. Is that right?
Yes, there's a group of 10 types of healthcare services that are required to be included in any of the plans that are offered through the exchange. That's called the essential health benefits. Now, I think about those as kind of buckets of different kinds of care. So there's regular doctor visits, there's hospital, there's medicines, there's x-rays and tests. So there's different buckets of kinds of services. But, you know, as you've heard a couple times already, how much is in those different buckets and how expansive the services are in each of those categories will vary, and it's going to vary especially depending on which metal level. But at least people can feel comfortable that the array or the scope of services is much more comprehensive than it has been in the past.
And we had a call from Will who said to make sure to say that folks check the deductibles for their providers, as we were talking about earlier. Some of them, especially bronze plan and things like that, they're very high.
They are. I mean, you can still, in a bronze plan, you can buy a very expensive, you know, health savings account, you know, an HSA account where your deductible is $5,000, $10,000. So, I mean, I think you really need to think about what those out-of-pocket costs, which is why Karen referenced them as being sort of catastrophic, even though by their name, that's not what they're called. But it basically gives you really sick health insurance, and then you pay for everything else. So, you know, if you're someone who's really, really healthy and never sees the doctor, and, you may be okay with a high deductible plan. But if you're somebody who has a chronic illness or, you know, whatever, you need to pay attention to that, because if you pick a high deductible plan, then you're paying that whole bill till you reach it.
Again, it goes back to the idea of planning ahead, knowing how much you've paid in the past for medical expenses, how much you might pay in the future, and just doing some thinking ahead on the whole thing.
Well, and just to clarify a few other terms we've used a lot, is what people will pay for their insurance plan each month is called the premium, how much I pay each month for my insurance. But then, as you've also heard, each time I go to the doctor or to buy medicine, I may also be paying something that can be called a copay or a co-insurance. So those are those kind of additional sharing of the cost will continue as they have in the past.
Maureen, for people who already have a plan under the Affordable Care Act, if I understand correctly, those plans will automatically renew. So that you don't really have to do anything, but I would still think that someone who's already enrolled would need to spend some time thinking about some things going into open enrollment. If their situation has changed, if their doctor's changed, if their health conditions or financial conditions have changed, right?
Absolutely. It is important to keep your information up to date, especially if it relates to your income, your employment status, or things that could affect the amount of subsidy or tax credit that you're going to receive. But I also think it's important that to know, as you've already heard, there are lots of different choices on the exchange or the marketplace. It's called both things. And so it is important, especially now, that people compare to what the new plans are and maybe, not just take for granted what I was getting. Although, as you say, that's right, it will automatically renew unless I, get on and make a different choice.
So if you haven't had many changes in life and things are pretty much status quo, then letting it automatically renew might be an okay way to go, but otherwise you need to think about the changes that have occurred in your life.
Well, I'd probably say, my advice would be that everyone at least take a quick look at the benefit, the insurance policy or the benefit that they were receiving, to make sure that there isn't something better, even for the same price.
So, right. It seems unlikely that people's plans are going to stay the exact same at the same price anyway. So even if your plan is going to be available and you will be automatically passively renewed, it's unlikely it's going to be at the exact same rate, which means you should also still compare versus new plans available relative to your income. I know in Kentucky, this is Karen, Kentucky, or from Kentucky, that consumers will get a notice from the marketplace on November 10th. We mailed out November 10th, letting them know if their plan is going to be available next year and if they're going to be eligible for passive enrollment. But a lot of consumers that I've spoken to have already gotten notices from their insurer about whether or not their plan will be available next year. So while the marketplaces are required to make it as passive as possible and make sure that if people don't do anything, they still have some kind of coverage, that coverage could change. So, be an informed consumer and take a look.
Can insurers change the deductibles, or do they have to follow that standard pattern of bronze, silver, gold, platinum?
Well, the deductible isn't necessarily related to the metal level. You could have a varying deductible within a metal level, and it doesn't have to be set the same way. Insurers often change plans, and over the history of insurance, they rarely stay stagnant. And in fact, I can't imagine that all of the rates ever stay stagnant. They've all applied for increases in their rates this year in Kentucky, so those rates will be going up. But you may have an option that costs less, even with that higher rate, depending on what you're looking for.
Kate, are you still seeing a lot of confusion about the Affordable Care Act from consumers, or have people started to educate themselves about it? So they're getting caught up from last year.
No, I think people are still confused about what the Affordable Care Act is. I think our polling data suggests that the greater Cincinnati area, Ohio, Kentucky, and the United States still don't really understand the law. But I think what we have seen, and when I talk with people, is now that they've experienced a year of it, there is a little less fear about it, even though they're not exactly sure everything that's compiled in the law. They've at least experienced it this year and sort of like, oh, is that what this was about? And so there's a little less fear.
Yes, some of what Maureen was saying with the health insurance literacy, there's some great data to show that people are more comfortable shopping for health coverage and also more apt to use and use well their health coverage if they have a higher level of health insurance literacy, which across the board is very, very low. So I thought I'll focus on health insurance literacy for community education. But so far, everywhere I've gone to talk, I've only gotten questions about the presentation I gave last year about what is the ACA. So in my experience, people are still trying to figure out what is this law? What does it mean?
Maureen, the coverage for this latest open enrollment period is going to start in 2015. And if I missed out on that first open enrollment period, are there still ways I can get coverage for 2014?
You mean for the remainder of this year?
Yes.
Boy, that's a good question.
Well, if you have a special enrollment period, if you've had a life event that's changed,
exceptions to
So SEPs, we call them special enrollment periods. If you've lost coverage or you had a change in income or you've moved or you've added someone to your household, anything that would essentially change your tax filing status, then you would be eligible to enroll at that time, anytime. And the same is true if your income was low enough to be eligible for what I call the full subsidy. So to be eligible for Medicaid up to 138% or working full-time minimum wage for one person, then anytime you can enroll.
Okay. So if you had changes in life then of some type that you could...
It's worth checking. I mean, there's no reason for everybody to try to memorize the list. I would just go try.
Maureen, the penalty, I guess that's going to play a role too. If you don't have coverage, there's a penalty at tax time. How exactly does that work?
Well, that's a good question. So for last year, the penalty was lower, and it was, the penalty started at about $95 if you didn't have health coverage. This year, the penalty will start at about $325 or 2% of your income, whichever is greater. So it's not equal to the cost of health insurance, but it certainly is intended to get people's attention and to encourage you to look at the exchange, to look at the kind of subsidies and tax credits that are available. Many people will find that they can get health coverage for a fairly nominal amount.
Is that penalty as high as it's going to get at this point, Maureen, or are there more increases to come?
It
keeps going up, and it just is. We're easing into this concept of everyone being required to have coverage or pay a penalty. So the first year and next year, the penalty is lower than you could possibly buy coverage. So it's, $95 or 1% of your income this year, and up $325 is still going to be cheaper to buy coverage than pay $325. I mean, the other way around, the penalty. But let's hope people see a value in getting covered as opposed to paying an extra penalty on their taxes for nothing.
Yeah, it's going to go up to 2.5% or $695 is the minimum, and then it'll go to increase with inflation.
And that's each year. So, and then there'll be a new IRS form.
And a quick question from Beth. She emailed and wanted to know if any of the plans cover drug addiction treatment. Is that required in the plans now?
All of them.
Must include it.
Anyone on the marketplace.
Well, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Kara Stewart is Health Law Fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations Catherine Keller, and Maureen Corcoran, President of Voorhees Healthcare Advisors. On November 10th, Cincinnati Edition will be taking another look at the Affordable Care Act. We'll be talking about the ACA and health insurance from the employer's perspective. And after the break, a conversation with Ira Glass, who's bringing his unique form of storytelling to Cincinnati later this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.